This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9 wishes to advise the following 2 hours of Hide and Seek is intended for an adult audience, and it may contain strong sexual references, coarse language, and drug references.
Hide and seek.
Sit back and enjoy the ride. And enjoy the ride. And enjoy the ride. And enjoy. And enjoy. And enjoy. And enjoy. And enjoy. And enjoy.
Hide and seek.
And enjoy the ride.
Welcome to Hide and Seek. I'm Dean Beck. Hide and Seek is your show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self. Now, my first guest here on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9 is a master's student at La Trobe University. Adam Becker joins us now. Adam, welcome to Hide and Seek, and thank you for joining us on Joy.
Thanks, Dean.
I love this. You're from the Faculty of Health Sciences at the School of Public Health, Department of Counselling and Psychological Health. Now, if you don't need a postgraduate degree to get through that, then something's going wrong. Can you explain to me what the Faculty of Health Sciences at the School of Public Health, Department of Counselling and Psychological Health is? What do they do?
Well, that's a good question to start with. The Department of Counselling and Psychological Health, we've got a number of programs, including counselling psychology, art therapy, gestalt therapy, that sit under that banner. So I suppose our focus is more on health, I think, than illness, per se.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit about your background. Did you grow up here in Melbourne?
I grew up in Perth.
In Perth.
So don't hold that against me.
It's all right. Welcome to the other side.
Yes, I grew up in Perth, and I've only been here for 5 months.
Wow. Yes. Welcome. Great. Okay, so you're coming here to extend your studies?
Well, I've always loved Melbourne, and I travelled to Melbourne a lot. So the opportunity came up to move, and I thought, well, I'll move over and finish off my study over here, and so I'm here.
How's it been for you so far?
I love it. I love it. This is home
for me.
Melbourne's
a great place.
It is a great place.
So growing up in Perth, what was that like? You're a gay man, I gather?
I am.
Right. And when did you come out?
Yeah, it's funny you were asking me that in the break, and I thought, when did I come out? Look, I must have been late teens, I think. It's sometimes sort of difficult to really place it, but so I suppose about, I don't know, 14 years ago, late teens, 19, something like that.
Yeah. And what was that process like for you? Was it, it's different for everybody.
Yeah, it was, I think it's a liberating process, and I think for some people it is, you know, it's difficult telling your parents. My mum wasn't so good, but she came around, and they're very supportive now, so I think I'm lucky. I've got a good family. Yeah, look, I think it was a good thing. I think it was about finding part of myself and allowing that part of myself to be expressed.
And you're studying a master's at La Trobe University.
Mm-hmm.
Your degree thesis. What did you explore with that?
Well, I'm doing it currently. So what I'm looking at is the experience of shame and embarrassment for gay men.
Right.
And it's been an interesting journey because I've been going back and forth to study for a few years now, and I was originally interested in gender role conflict and internalised homophobia for gay men, and really through a process of my own, through my own journey and through thinking about what it was that I really wanted to research, I came to the conclusion that I really wanted to look at the experience of shame for gay men.
Is internalised homophobia the type of homophobia we see perhaps in the football field, that type of thing, or are we talking about people who party on weekends and wear suits during the week?
Well, I think, everyone has a different opinion, but what I think one of the things that you can sort of fairly say is that for a lot of gay people, for a lot of gay men, and the interest of my study is for gay men, that growing up gay in a straight society, we internalise the larger held cultural values, and that can lead to a sense of internalised homophobia. In a way, we internalise values that are dissonant to who we actually are, to our sexuality. And
that then manifests in various
incarnations, it really does.
I guess.
Yeah. Really does. There's been a lot of research done on internalised homophobia, and it has been consistently linked to depression, anxiety, lowered self-esteem, suicidal ideation, suicide, sexual compulsivity, HIV risk,
and
alcoholism.
Then the other extent of that, I guess, is the violent aspects or the outrage or when it builds up, I guess, to a certain extent, or is it there is enough self-hatred to want to physically do something about it?
Well, there is a link between internalised homophobia and particularly shame, what I'm interested in, and rage, because when people feel, when something happens to someone that stimulates internal feelings around shame, often the defensive reaction is to lash out and to be filled with rage, because you're trying to protect your sense of self.
There's almost an overcompensating or something with elements of that sometimes.
Yeah, there is. Mm. There is. And the difficult thing is that rage is then followed by more guilt and shame, and it becomes a cycle.
Adam, your explorations into gay men and their shame, what does the study itself actually involve? What do you have to do to participate to be a part of this study?
Yeah, what I'm doing is I'm sitting down and talking with people. So I think what's really important is I didn't want to use scales or questionnaires. I wanted to sit down and talk to people about their life stories. And I'm interested in significant experiences with shame and embarrassment that people have had. But, you know, really with a lot of participants, it just turns into a conversation, and a lot of my questions get answered as a result anyway. But I think what's really important is, whilst it might sort of seem to make sense that people would have studied the experience of shame amongst gay men, it really hasn't necessarily been studied, and definitely not in Australia. So it's intimated in a lot of research, but specific projects that are focused on the experience of shame for gay men, pretty thin on the ground.
And what sort of scale are we talking? You can't physically interview 1,000 people, or can you?
Well, no, because the transcribing would take me the rest of my lifetime. I'm aiming for somewhere between 10 and 20, but I'm not really sure. I'm not firm on those numbers at this point in time. Yeah, because if I continue on researching into next year, then I may do more.
Can you explain to me and the listener why a study of 10 people could be so important to us as a community? I would see that as potentially a very small focus group, but the outcomes could be quite grand. So can you talk to us about how that comes about?
Well, I think the important thing is that a research project on its own contributes to a field of knowledge. So I suppose it's not, you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, but there's sort of two parts to it. One interview of 1 hour with a participant can give you an immense amount of data. So I think that this is the start of well, not the start, but building on other people's research as well, of being able to look at what is the everyday experience of gay men related to shame, and how can people help us, counsellors and psychologists, how can they work with this better? Because in many ways, shame is still a taboo in our society, in Western societies like Australia, the UK, USA, and it's often missed in therapy.
And I guess to a large extent, that element of shame is what manifests for a lot of youth as into youth suicide. I mean, there's a lot of personal shame. Prior to coming out, I can remember vast amounts of sort of personal shame, as you describe it. I found that when I came out, a lot of that lifted, and the more I came out, I guess, the more it lifted. But particularly for younger people, I can see how it's very critical, a study of shame like this. And so how will that, does it, the matrix of the conversations that you have with people, where it overlaps, help to focus particular diagnoses or particular treatment forms, or how do you see it benefiting?
Yeah, look, I wish I could give a simple answer to that one. And I agree with what you're saying in terms of suicide. There are many variables that play into that, but no doubt shame does play a role. I think what's important is from the research to be able to identify some key themes that come through for people's experience, and then think about in therapy what can we be doing with those people that's going to be helpful for them. I think when it's overlooked, often it's possible that therapy and counselling can actually possibly make the issue worse. So how do we, you know, we have gay affirmative psychotherapy and, you know, we've made a lot of progress in terms of understanding how to work with GLBT community, but I still think that we can learn more and also influence policy and all of those kinds of things.
And I think what you're talking then is reducing the risky behaviours of what might transpire elsewhere.
Mm.
You know, we all make silly mistakes, but at least if we know that there's someone there to take us through some of the tough times and someone to reach out to, those silly decisions that we might sometimes make become less.
I think as well, often the silly decisions that we might make, as you say, it's sometimes difficult to understand where they come from.
Mm.
And they often take control of our lives and we struggle with difficulties and we're unsure as to why that is. So I think it's really about helping people on that journey of building a stable and strong identity. And often when there are issues around shame and embarrassment as a result of growing up gay in a straight world, it can really make our identity quite fragile and shaky.
Adam Becker, a master's student at La Trobe University, is my guest here on Hide and Seek. Adam, if I felt that I could contribute to your study on gay men and shame, how would I go about doing that? How do I get in touch with you?
Yeah, well, it'd be great if you could contact me.
Is there a specific gay man that you're looking for?
There is.
Other than the 6'4" blonde German backpacker, is there a specific gay man that you're looking for your study?
I would really like to speak to I would really like to speak to some younger people, actually, 18 to 30 year olds. And that's, I don't have anything against older people. I have spoken to a few older people, so I'd like to really get quite a diverse sample.
So you're in your own study, you're missing that little element that you want
to explore
further.
Yeah, I'd like to see if there's some differences between those age groups. Yeah, so if they could contact me, that would be great.
And what's involved?
So involvement is 2 one-hour interviews separated by about a week.
Right, okay, yep. Yeah, is that just so that you make sure that they told you the right story the first time, or why the 2 interviews?
Well, I think the important thing is that I want to be really collaborative in my research. So, you know, it's not that I'm saying I have the answers. I actually want to work with people and see what their ideas are and build a picture together. So what I try and do is myself reflect on the interview from the previous week and have that inform, you know, what questions I might ask the following week.
Right, so the other questions are, once you've assessed where you were at with that interview, you then might have more questions that
That's
you want
right.
to follow up.
That's right.
Right, okay. And how do we go about contacting you for this great opportunity to participate in the betterment of gay humanity?
You're very complimentary. Firstly, mobile number. So my mobile number is 0437 755 580.
0437 755 580, and you're fine for people to contact you
sure.
on that number?
Sure.
Make sure it's during business hours so that the man can get some sleep. How many people would you be after if we can get tonight?
Look, I would like as many people to contact me that are interested. Even if I sort of have enough people to interview at this stage, I'd really like to take people's details and be able to contact them in the future should I need to talk to them. They can email me as well.
And what is your email?
It's abecker, A-B-E-C-K-E-R, @students.latrobe.edu.au.
Or by phone on 0437 755 580. Adam Becker, our first guest tonight on Hide and Seek here on Joy 94.9. He's studying gay shame and he wants you to participate. It involves 2 one-hour interviews, a one-on-one interview with Adam. Those interviews are conducted here at La Trobe Uni in the city. Adam, thank you very much for joining us on Hide and Seek.
Thanks, Dean.
You're on Joy 94.9.
Hide and seek.
Joining me in the studio is the one and only Fiona Patton, head of the Australian Sex Party. Fiona, welcome and thank you for coming into the studio on Hide and Seek.
Thank you, Dean. Thank you.
It's great to have the Australian Sex Party with us, and we want to find a little bit more about why we need an Australian Sex Party. Now, I mean, we had Pauline Hanson. Why not? But I don't want to put you in that bracket.
No, thank you. Thank you. A number of people have, but I'm hoping it was only on maybe our preference deals. I'm hoping to be the Steve Fielding of preference deals.
That'd work all right for you.
That would be great.
Yes.
But I think, look, it's really, in 2009, we have more censorship than we did last century. We're seeing things like the internet filter, which I don't know if some of the listeners understand. I mean, this is going to block, mandatory block, and make it illegal for an ISP to allow an Australian to view X-rated material.
I don't know whether the listener realises, but you can't host X-rated material on an Australian internet service provider.
No, that's right.
So we're going one step further than that.
Exactly. And it will be a secret blacklist. So ISPs, you think this is mad. Like, how can you possibly block every single X-rated site? I mean, they are in the millions and growing every nanosecond.
I think they're one of the largest growing sectors of new website allocations in the world.
You know, and I think that might say something about where our community is with sex and sexuality.
They don't appear without demand, surely.
That's right, yes. You know, I don't think there's a lot of people just throwing money at an ISP saying, please, I just want to have my own porn site. There will be a few out there, of course. But there's certainly, I mean, we've seen greater censorship. I think also, I mean, we're seeing the community attitudes becoming diametrically opposed to government policy, whether that's on abortion or RU486, which is a sort of a medical, a non-surgical abortion technique, whether it's on gay rights, whether it's on same-sex marriage. You know, I see that we recognise gay relationships to a degree, but not the full hog. I think we ignore sexual health as an extremely important part of people's lives. And, you know, the governments just seem to be getting further, more and more frightened of sexual issues. And we're also seeing the likes of Steve Fielding, the Australian Christian Lobby, a whole range of very conservative organisations proving to be very powerful in our political process.
Do you find that they're listening to your concerns or our concerns, or are they very dogged in their stance? Are they fixed, and because of the mass of people that they feel is behind them in their in taking a stance, that they're inflexible, and that's why we need someone to counterbalance that?
Look, I really do think we need someone to counterbalance it. It's the second part first.
Sure.
That we need another voice in the Senate, that we need a variety of voices, and the Senate is that house of review. So I think it is a place where it's important that different voices are heard, and at the moment I don't think a lot of voices are being heard. But on the other side, I've had a number of politicians, when I've spoken to them about censorship issues, for example, or prostitution or a whole range of issues, say, look, Fiona, I totally agree with what you're saying, but in my electorate, there's a very vocal church down the road. Now, I hold this seat by 5%. So if I come and support you, then they're going to vote against me. Now, I know the majority of people probably do support you, but it's the 5% I'm concerned about. And I think that's the same with Prime Minister Rudd. I think it's the same with the Liberal Party. And not frighteningly, but I think as the Greens grow as well, they're becoming more concerned about their keeping the loud parts of their constituency happy.
It's interesting. Our Prime Minister seemed to have quite liberal, small l, liberal views going back prior to him possibly being a Prime Ministerial candidate. Mm. Then that kind of shifted. Mm. And then there was all of a sudden this kind of connection to the religious groups.
Mm.
And now we find him perhaps, nowhere near as conservative as our previous Prime Minister, but certainly inflexible, I think, is the word I'm looking for.
Absolutely. And I think he is duplicitous sometimes. But his response to the Christian Lobby And I think he is paying the piper now with things like the internet filter. But he did go, you know, he sort of launched his election campaign almost on the Christian Lobby's website, as did John Howard. But they, it was probably something that the vast majority of people didn't see or hear because they weren't on the Australian Christian Lobby's website on that Wednesday evening.
Sure. And look, I think there's an element too that it's fine for us to bag the Christian Lobby, but what's happening to the vocal majority? Mm. You know, the majority of people might agree with us, but if they agree with us, why aren't we hearing them drown out this 5% of the religious element?
Wouldn't it be
about?
Fabulous if people, you know, came up and said, I love sex.
Or even, I have sex.
Or I have sex, exactly.
Guess you what? Know, I have sex.
That's right.
Well, I haven't this week, but that's because I've been busy on this show. But I didn't know that producing a show about sex would mean that you no longer have a sex life. But,
well, I'm sure we'll talk about this later. But, you know, as we know, no one has sex at Sexpo. You know, it's a rule.
Yes.
But, yes, it's funny. The more you talk about sex,
the less
you. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. I had an argument with Senator Harradine many years ago about who had watched the most porn, and he was saying, well, you're the pornographer, of course you've watched a lot of porn. I said, you're the anti-pornographer, you've watched more. And we had a very childish argument about that. But yeah, I think the problem is that people don't feel that they want to stand up and be counted and say, I actually like to watch sexual films, I actually like to go to clubs, I'm an adult, and I should be allowed to choose what I say and wish, which
if we
do.
Get every person that has sex voting for you, I think we'll be done. That'll be all right, wouldn't it?
Look, I think we could be, you know, we could take the primary, we could take the lodge with that. You know? Well, that's if everybody, you know, isn't lying.
Well, yeah, there is that. We're with Fiona Patton from the Australian Sex Party. We'll take a little break and we'll be back with you very shortly. You're on Joy 94.9.
Hide and seek.
In the studio with me is Fiona Patton from the Australian Sex Party. Fiona, we've had a couple of really lovely SMSs. One that says, this is from Steve the Truckee. He says, hi, Fiona. I have a healthy sex life and applaud what it is that you stand for. Well done.
Oh, thank you.
Isn't that great?
And I'm pleased to hear you've got a healthy sex life.
And another SMS here reads, hey, just thought I'd say great show. It's about time there was a show like this on Joy. Takes me back to listening to Dr. Feelgood under the doona when I was a kid.
So. Aww.
And you know what? I used to listen to Dr. Feelgood when I was a kid too. So even in Bendigo, I used to tune in and it would fade in and fade out and I'd get about 10 minutes and then about 3 minutes of hiss. And
I mean, it's just amazing how desperate people are for information sometimes, isn't it?
And I think one of the important things with this show is that we want to invite people to have a conversation, a healthy conversation about sex and sexuality and just be okay with it, you know, that's and right. share some of our experiences. Yep. And a lot of it's funny and that's great.
Exactly.
So let's share the funny bits too, you know.
Look, sex is supposed to be fun. You know?
Indeed. But there's a serious side to it and that's why we've got the Australian Sex Party.
Yes.
So I want to have a chat to you about some of your policies. And I notice here that you want to enact a national anti-discrimination law which make it illegal to unfairly discriminate against people or companies on the basis of jobs, occupations, profession or calling. And now, don't we have anti-discrimination laws already that are pretty powerful?
No. I mean, we have some regarding your sex, but even those don't go terribly far, and we'll probably discuss that a bit later. But in regards to where this really came out of was very much from the sex industry. So, for example, if a sex worker in Victoria wants to place an ad in a newspaper, he or she will pay anything from triple to five times the amount for the person trying to sell their car in the same classifieds.
For the placement of the advertisement.
For the placement of the advertisement because of their occupation, because they are advertising for sexual services rather than car detailing. So we find that quite often. It's also often that a brothel or even an adult shop will ring for a quote for insurance or for carpet laying, and the quotes will come back at three times the amount that if they had rung from the neighbouring restaurant or, you know, the neighbouring tool shop.
I'm aware of rentals being, particularly in adult shops that have covered by the grandfather clause in a city, adult shops where rentals are three and four times what would be the standard commercial rate for that site.
Right.
So that's the sort of thing you're talking
about. That's right. That's right. And look, I mean, when this was introduced in the ACT some years ago, and in the ACT we saw insurance rates plummet by up to 90% in some cases. So we really saw
we really saw
the type of discrimination that was being seen. And I don't think it will just be for people in the sex industry. I think that you'll actually find that a lot of other people find themselves discriminated against because of their calling or their occupation.
Well, there's one policy. We've also got another policy around a national sex education curriculum for secondary school students.
Yeah.
Now, national curriculums for students in primary and secondary are always debated.
That's right.
You're talking about a specific component within that education platform. Let's talk about that.
Look, I think it's absolutely fundamental that, you know, sex is a fundamental part of our lives. And even just, I mean, look, it sort of came up with the recent thing with the footballers behaving badly and kind of sexual violence and sex, you know, 15-year-old sending naked SMSs and things like that. We just thought, you know what, we really actually need a national curriculum that teaches kids not just the anatomy of your body, not just the biology of sex, but let's talk about the emotional side of sex. Let's talk about, I actually think I would like to see it from the day they go to school to the day you finish school, that sex is part of a natural part of your curriculum. And some schools already do it very well. Some schools don't do it at all, and some schools do it very badly. And I don't think that kids should be discriminated against because of the school they go to or the state that they live in. And I think we can very easily afford to, and we should afford to introduce a national curriculum on this.
It's interesting you mentioned that case about young kids sending pictures of themselves to each other. I have a case here in front of me of a child that has been sentenced to probation for child pornography charges. This is a 14-year-old girl who was arrested on March the 25th in Clifton, New Jersey, who went to an adult court and was sentenced to probation on the fact that she was peddling child porn.
There are cases in Australia as well being heard at the moment where 15-year-old girls have sent, probably naively, have sent a very cute, provocative photo to their boyfriend at the time. Their boyfriend of the time has then, you know, forwarded that around to all his mates, and then those kids are technically in breach of child pornography laws. Kids will be kids, but we need to talk, and I don't think the law should really charge people for that. I think the law is an ass, but we really need to look at good sex education that does talk about these things. You know, blocking the internet from kids is not going to stop them from coming across sexually explicit material. And so I think in this time of sort of hyper media and hyper reality, it's really important that our kids are kept up to date and our kids aren't sort of hidden away from this material, and that we teach them well and we teach them age appropriate, and so they're ready.
And again, I think the more we open up the lines of communication for them to feel comfortable talking to their parents, the more that they will be able to make intelligent choices for themselves.
Exactly. And I think every other study has shown that sex education doesn't, you know, decrease the age that people are having sex. Probably what it does do is it improves relationships. It reduces the level of sexual violence, reduces the level of teenage pregnancies, STDs, all of those things, which can only be good for a society as a whole.
Fiona Patton with us from the Australian Sex Party. You're listening to Joy 94.9.
Hide and seek.
I think you have to be gentle.
Thanks for
listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.